What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another episode of Punt Intended, a fantasy NBA dynasty podcast. I am your host, Rhett Bauer, coming to you with another episode looking back at the deadline, but more so about the sort of risers and fallers we've seen now that we are almost 2 months into it. And we're kind of getting into silly season if we're not firmly in there already. But I wanted to take this time to look at some of the performances we've seen in between early February to now, before we really start getting some crazy tanking and benchings and just general silliness. Some of these lines, some of this production is actually fairly legitimate. There's obviously going to be some exceptions, but there's some interesting takeaways that I want to get into. But before we do, please make sure you rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us out. Trying to get back to doing this too every 2 weeks, and so far we are 2 for 2 on that, so let's keep that up. Just be sure to spread the word. I know Dynasty is fairly uncommon, but also the community, once you get into it, is extremely passionate about it, which is why we started this in the first place. So spreading the word would be fantastic. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Rhett_Bauer. Follow the show at Punt Intended Pod. And last but certainly not least, Sports Ethos is looking for some dynasty writers. You can be as flexible as you want. There are obviously, we're just looking for consistency. I have a lot of tools already set up that gets data together. I just don't have all of the time necessary to consistently write one article a week on top of the podcast. And now my wife is starting a master's degree that gets done in a year. So we will be strapped for time even more so than what having 3 kids and another job brings to the table. So if you are interested in that, please let me know on Twitter. Like I said, at Rhett_Bauer. I'll probably give you a small task, something to write, and just so I can see where you're at. I'll be managing / editing that. However you present your content is up to you. I just want to help you along and make sure that I can put any finishing touches on it and get it out into the world. That way you can start building your portfolio, and eventually maybe you just host Pun Intended every once in a while too. That would just be great. So come join me. Let's get into some of these names. So last episode, I talked about the pre-deadline trade targets that I called out. And so I don't want to talk about all of them, but I will say that all of the shallow league calls I had, Trey Murphy, Pat Will, DeAndre Ayton, Michael Porter Jr., and J-Dub are all producing better than what they were pre-deadline. And the only two that aren't are Sadiq Bey and John Collins, who are now on the same team, and boy, are they cannibalizing each other. So I feel pretty good about that. I had three sells: Trey Jones, Julius Randle, Bol Bol. Trey Jones is on the Spurs. They're being utterly ridiculous right now. Randle, just a slight slide, and then Bol Bol, we all knew that was coming. So feel pretty good about those calls. But we are here to look at, I have two criteria, two different groups that these guys fall in. So one is just the biggest risers in the top 300. So if you are ranked in the top 300 post deadline, I grab your ranking pre deadline. And if you made the biggest jump, you are on my list. So we've got guys like Chris Dunn, who obviously was not ranked pre deadline because he wasn't playing anywhere pre deadline. Same thing with Jay Crowder. So those two guys are kind of in their own world of jumping up that much because they just simply weren't playing. Chris Dunn, I think, is a little bit more real, I'm putting air quotes up, because he is a guy that we've seen have some sort of fantasy relevance, but honestly just didn't look great, and obviously a couple teams gave up on him. But now he's playing 23 minutes a game for the Jazz, and he's 11 points, 4 boards, 5 assists, 1 steal, good percentages, like 1.3 turnovers for that many assists. Like, that's just an overall pretty good line, so it'll be interesting to see what becomes of him once the season is over. Obviously the Jazz have a lot going on, but he's a guy that could just stick as a backup point guard somewhere, and 23 minutes a game is not that crazy. So pretty intrigued with him. Jay Crowder, we know what he is. He's only at 219th on the season, but that just so happens to be 281 spots up from 500, which is where I made the cutoff. If you are beyond 500, I just kept it at 500 because that's just silly. So a couple other guys that are actually like were playing pre-deadline but jumped up a big amount. Ochai Agbaji. I liked Ochai mostly just because I thought he would be a 3-and-D wing that would just play a bunch. Like, he was a guy, I think I said in my rookie blurbs before the season started, I was like, Ochai does not have a very good fantasy-friendly game. The only thing that he has going for him is minutes per game, because he's likely going to end up a guy who just plays 25 minutes a night. And obviously, he's only playing 15 minutes a night for the Jazz, and he has some rough stretches. But as a whole, he is playing 15 more minutes a night. He's hitting 1.5 threes more per night, and he's taking 6 more shots. Like, those are all really good things to like about a guy. Like, obviously there's, you want him to be more efficient, which isn't there yet, but he's getting to the line a little bit more, and he's hitting those at a better rate. So Ochai, he was struggling early in the year, which has a lot to do with his 409th nine cat rating for the first 4 months of the season, but kind of turning it around as of late. And so I mean, obviously he was picked in the lottery. He was picked as a ready to contribute guy. I thought the Cavs should have kept him out of the Donovan Mitchell trade because they had such a sore spot at the three, but obviously you're not going to let Agbaji be the stopping point with Danny Age and Donovan Mitchell when the Knicks are looming. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to see what he does. I don't think he's going to be any more than just 3-and-D. Like, I don't see him creating shots. I don't see him doing much other than being more of a role player. But again, deep leagues, that can have value. So hopefully you did not sell all of your Agbaji stock in like 30 team leagues where this jump in production is pretty huge, probably led to some pretty productive playoff matchups, assuming your studs were healthy. Next up is a guy that should not be surprising, and I was slamming the table for the Mavs to play this dude the entire year because their future was so bleak. Their young prospects were so, it was Josh Green and that's it. And that is Jaden Hardy for the Dallas Mavericks. But pre-deadline, he was 388th for 9-cat. And that was mostly just because he was barely playing. After deadline, he is 195th. He's playing 11 more minutes a game, getting 6 more points. He's seeing 2 more threes than he was before the deadline. That's like, it's a huge, huge jump. 1.3 boards, 1.6 assists. Like, these are all more than what he was doing pre-deadline. So he's just up across the board doing better. And I don't see his role being minimized any moving forward. Like, I suppose if the Mavs bring back Kyrie and they make another move to get another ball handler in there that could maybe play a little bit more defense, because that's not what Hardy's going to do. He's 6'4 with a 6'9 wingspan, which is impressive. But Hardy, he's just he's just an offensive, I was going to say engine, but I don't know if he's quite an engine yet. He's just a bucket. He just gets buckets, and he's shooting the ball very, very well. I think he's shooting 40% from three off the bounce and on catch and shoot, which is extremely rare and very important when you're playing next to Luka Doncic. And there's a chance that the Mavs use him as an asset in a trade to get Luka some more help, which then I assume at that point Hardy would be valued by the team that he's going to because of what he's shown since then. So I am excited to see what he can do as a guy who was one of the top five prospects of last year's draft class and then struggled in the G League and then was knocked for it because his production was being compared to college players while the competition level wasn't the same. I don't know. I really think that we as an evaluation community need to change the way we look at how players do in the G League, like for the G League Ignite. It's just one of those, like, it's not the same league. It's not college. So why are we treating his production like college? Like, yeah, he was inefficient. He was creating all of his own shots. Like, if you watched, shot selection was an issue, but towards the end of the year, his shot selection was a lot better. His efficiency was better. He was making better passes. Having fewer turnovers. Like, I don't know. We just need to evaluate G League just a little bit differently than we do college and not make it like a one for one. Next on the list, Matisse Thybulle. He was a guy that I called out as a deep league dynasty target because we know what he does, and it just so happens he's doing it in Portland. He is actually 100th over the last couple weeks, and he's playing 15 more minutes. You know, it's not points, it's not rebounds. He's actually hitting 1.1 more threes in that stretch, which is awesome. But really, you're here because he has 0.8 more blocks and 0.5 or 0.8 more steals, excuse me, 0.5 more blocks in that time. That's what he's good for. I mean, he's low volume, but decent percentages, and he's just a stocks machine. And so heading into restricted free agency this summer, I am intrigued with where he might go. He is still a defensive specialist. He will not be in closing lineups very much, but he's so disruptive on the defensive end that I just can't help but feel like there's going to be a team that pays him and plays him accordingly. I know that I would be pretty excited to have a defensive playmaker like him on the Indiana Pacers to let Tyrese Halliburton and Benedict Mathurin get out and transition more, but that we'll leave that alone for the offseason. Next is Josh Okogie, which should not be a surprise for anybody. He was 316th before the deadline. He's 130th since then. Kevin Durant going out and, or the Suns trading all of their depth for Kevin Durant, and then Kevin Durant going out meant Josh Okogie got way more run, but he was also finding himself as the fifth starter / closer with the few games that Kevin Durant was healthy. So, you know, he's just playing 16 more minutes a game, 7 points, 1.3 threes, rebound, assist, you know, decent percentages. He's just a solid contributor. I liked Okogie, and then he was buried in Minnesota, and I don't know why I let him fall off my radar when I know how terrible of an organization is Minnesota, goodness, when it comes to just developing guys and putting them in proper context, which is hilarious because they did the exact wrong thing that Anthony Edwards needed by bringing in Rudy Gobert and to stunt his development, but he made the most of it, and not only that, exploded this year while Cat was out. But yeah, Josh Okogie for the Suns, pretty interesting. Last and not least, for the group that was outside of like the normal everyday fantasy names, Zach Collins was 223rd prior to the deadline, is 49th for Nine Cat since then. You know, there is some Spurs are tanking. They're not good, but they also traded away Jakob Poeltl, and Zach Collins since then has been playing 8.5 more minutes. He's taking 6 more shots, turning that into 7 more points, 1.3 more threes, getting 2.5 more boards, 1.4 extra assists, 0.7 steals, 0.2 extra blocks. He has such a fantasy friendly game, and we've known this forever, but he was so injured for so long that, again, another guy that just fell off some radars. And I don't think this level of production is legit, because I don't think he's a starting caliber player in this league, but I think he's proving how productive he can be in a 25 minute a night type of role. And I don't see why that couldn't be a thing. You know, it's going to depend so much on what the Spurs do moving forward, because, you know, they're in a position to have some pretty good draft picks. But Zach Collins only playing about 29 minutes a game post deadline. And like I said, I don't think that is very realistic for him moving forward. But even before the deadline, when he was playing 20 minutes a night, obviously that was good for 223rd. That's not going to be good enough unless it's a deep league, but still pretty interesting boost in production there. So maybe sell high this summer. I don't know. People are probably wary of the Spurs, and so maybe you just want to hold on when good young centers are pretty hard to come by. Xavier Tillman, obviously huge boost because Steven Adams been out. He's playing like a top 100 player since the deadline. A lot of extra points, or a lot of extra minutes, extra boards, assists, steals, blocks. So, you know, everything came up once minutes went up, and that's just kind of how a guy like that goes. But the last guy who was outside the top 300 and jumped up 168 spots is Shaedon Sharpe. He's only playing 5 more minutes a game, but he's scoring 4 more points, hitting 0.8 threes, 1.2 extra assists, a half a steal, almost a half a block on improved efficiency despite the improved volume. Shaedon Sharpe looks really, really good. I don't know what the heck the Blazers are doing, because they are trying to win, yet somehow end up with the same record as teams like Orlando and Indiana, who have had a comparable in injuries but worse talent, and yet they're in the same boat when it comes to draft positions. That's just odd, but no doubt that when the lead draft analyst for ESPN leaves that position and then joins a team, and then that team drafts the guy who was probably the most unknown draft prospect ever, because we had like 6 games of high school / trap AAU, like it's just that whole situation is crazy. But Shaedon Sharpe jumping way up the board. Okay, so I said I had a couple buckets. This is the next one. These are players who were already inside the top 150 but made huge jumps from there, and that is best exemplified by my guy J-Dub, Jalen Williams, probably our guy Jalen Williams now, because this dude is a freaking beast. He was 1/16th pre-deadline. He has been the 20th best player in 9-cat since the deadline, playing 4.5 more minutes, 6 extra points, a half an extra three, 1.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, half a steal, and better percentages on higher volume without adjusting, without any extra turnovers. He is insane. And I was DMing with Matt Lawson the other day, and I had been saying for a while, I was like, I think Jalen Williams might end up like a Gordon Hayward type player, where he's just consistent across the board and doesn't hurt you anywhere, just does a bunch of everything, is just a really, really good two-way player. And Matt was like, well, I mean, Hayward never got these kind of steals. And so then I got thinking about it. I was like, you know what Hayward is with elite steals? That's Kawhi Leonard. Because that is exactly the kind of elite efficiency from the field and from the line, despite high volume scoring, good rebounding, good assists, elite steals with decent blocks and decent threes with low turnovers. That is Kawhi Leonard. I'm not saying Jalen Williams is going to be Kawhi Leonard, but for fantasy, he is trending towards that kind of profile. It will be interesting to see what happens with him as OKC gets better. I think he's a lock for 32 minutes a game, no matter what they do. He's too good on both ends of the floor. He fits in with everybody. He can play alongside Shea and Giddy as the third ball handler connector piece, or he can just be the backup point guard for this team. He's incredible. Absolutely love it. And I'm really, really hoping that you guys took my advice and said to approach him with extreme prejudice heading into the trade deadline, because man, you probably won your league if that's what happened. Next is Tyrese Maxey, and I will admit I struggle with Tyrese Maxey because I just don't always see the superstar stat set that it seems like a lot of other people do. And I might be seeing it now because he is up from the, let's see, where was he at? He was the 123rd best player pre-deadline. Post-deadline, he's been the 31st best player, playing 34 minutes a night, scoring 22 points on pretty good efficiency, hitting 22 points, three threes, three boards, three assists, one steal, 53% from the field on 15 shots, and then 92% from the line on three attempts a game with 1.1 turnovers. I don't think either of those shooting numbers are very real, but we've seen that he can have hot stretches, and I think his free throw percentage the last couple of years has been oddly down. So yeah, there's definitely a path there. I try to stay away from players who rely solely on high volume, efficient scoring, because then if they aren't hitting their shots, then your field goal percent is tanked, your threes are tanked, and your points are tanked, and they don't get very many steals or blocks or rebounds or assists. And so you're tanking three categories at once if they don't end up hitting those shots on that night. So obviously over a season long sample size, that's not that big of a deal, but in a weekly sample size where you might have two, three, four games, that can matter if somebody hits a cold stretch. So that's just kind of why I tend to be biased against players whose peripheral stats just aren't fantastic, but Maxey looks good, man. He's good, and Harden could potentially bounce back to Houston for whatever reason, because he's scared of actually winning something and wants to go back to where he's comfortable and worshipped. Sure, whatever. So yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens with Maxey moving forward.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Next couple guys, Emmanuel Quickley made a huge, huge, huge jump. He's just hitting more shots. That's kind of all that is. He's playing a couple extra minutes. He's closing games. he's handling the ball more and his defensive stats are a little bit up, but his efficiency is what jumped in with a little bit more opportunity as well. Jakob Poeltl has been insane. I don't know how real it is. I don't know. He's another guy that I struggle to think is not good. He's obviously good, but he's playing 28 minutes a night for the Raptors, which isn't that surprising, since that's about what he was with the Spurs. 14 points, 10 boards, 2.5 assists, 1.4 steals, 1.5 blocks, 66% from the field, and 1.2 turnovers, when we know where he's a huge detriment in the free throw percentage category. 1.4 steals is a lot for him. 1.5 blocks is probably a little bit low, but we know how much a huge, huge jump in defensive stats from a small sample can really just screw things up. So I don't think, I mean, he's in Toronto, which means he might have less of the silliness that the Spurs did. And they are trying to win games. So it's very likely that he stays there. He has the same role, whatever. So that's good. Derek White, Josh Hart, both up from about the 100 range into the top 50, which is awesome. Josh Hart's actually doing that on 3 less minutes a game, but his defensive stats and efficiency are up while his points and threes are up. So that's obviously going to have a lot to do with that. Markel Fultz, you know, you weren't going to get away with him jumping up so much and not me not talking about him. He's actually up to around top 50 value post deadline. He's playing 4 minutes extra a game, scoring 4 more points, getting 1 more rebound, another half of an assist. Steals and blocks are barely up. Efficiency's holding despite an extra 3 shots and 3 free throw attempts, and turnovers haven't really gone up. So he's, I mean, you guys know how I feel about Fultz, but I genuinely don't think that 33 minutes a game, 16 points, 5 boards, 6.2 assists, 1.6 steals, half a block on 49% from the field, 87% from the line. The free throw shooting is probably a little bit high, and I don't know how I feel about him getting 16 points. That seems like a lot, and obviously all of this is thrown out of the window if the Magic end up getting Scoot Henderson. But I don't love any of the other guards in the draft in the top 10. And the Magic seem to really, really like Markel Fultz. They talk about him a ton. Seems like all the beat reporters want to talk. Like, it's just, there's so much about him that they seem to like. And so, hey, why shouldn't we like him too? A guy that I did talk about targeting prior to the deadline was a guy, DeAndre Ayton. I have been trying to buy DeAndre Ayton everywhere because people look at his top 50 consistency over the last 3 years and they see no improvement. And that's just not true. His stocks have just gone down. Not his value stock, although I guess his value stock also went down, but his defensive stats just kept falling. He was getting like half a block. How are you a center playing 30 minutes a game and getting half a block when you're DeAndre Ayton? You're a physical freak. That is no longer the case. He's playing 1.7 extra minutes. His scoring is down. His rebounding is down. His assists are down, but his steals and his blocks are up 0.3 and 0.4, while his efficiency is barely up. So if you look at it, like that 0.3 and that 0.4 is the difference between him being a top 70 player and the top 25 player, because he's getting 0.8 steals and 1.1 blocks. That's still not quite where he could be for his blocks. Like, he could easily end up at 1.5 like he was his rookie year. And then what? We're looking at a top 20 player? I don't know. Obviously, steals and blocks are pretty inconsistent. Like, you don't want to rely on them a ton, especially when you know you have 2 whole seasons of them playing the same defense, and you know that it doesn't lead to defensive playmaking from Ayton. But this is just a glimpse. He can do it. Like, he didn't forget how to block shots. He didn't forget how to play make on defense. So another guy that I am excited to see do the things that we have been wondering why he wasn't doing. Wendell Carter Jr. up a little bit as well. Last out of this top 150 group, up from 118 to 84, not playing anymore. He's just hitting more shots and is getting a little bit more steals, and that's really all that it takes for a guy like that to have a big jump in from the 120s to like the 80s. Cause you know, if you're just doing a little bit of everything across the board and you're hitting a couple more shots, everything's going to rise. You're just going to end up jumping your way up there. I really like Wendell Carter. It seems like the Magic really like Wendell Carter. Again, they could screw all of this up at the draft, and then what do we do? I don't know. He's a good player, though. Good on both ends. Solid. And another guy who just doesn't get defensive stats for some reason. But I would not be surprised if he ended up as a guy who would get, like, I don't know, 0.7 steals and point. What do you think? He's got to get a block, right? He's got to get a block. So anyways, Wendell Carter Jr., good player. So now we are going to get into the biggest fallers, and that is with no criteria at all. It is literally who fell the most. And almost all of these are injury related, because Zion was 62 pre-deadline. Obviously, he fell a ton because he hasn't played since then. Cade, same deal. Poku, same deal. Otto Porter, Steven Adams, Justice Winslow. But then you get into the LeBron James, who fell from 18th to 296th. And that is because not only was he playing 6 minutes less, and so he was taking six less shots, but his free throw percentage was, or his free throw and field goal percentage were just atrocious. So I don't take very much of this other than the fact that if his foot was really that jacked up and he's coming back to play on it, like, yikes, that's just not what I would want. If I was a stockholder of LeBron James in a dynasty league, because that, I just can't imagine that's good for his long-term, even if I get it from this season's perspective and them trying to make the playoffs. But then there's John Wall. So a lot of these guys aren't like super useful pieces, but when you get into the players that fell out of the top 150, that is where we will see the most important players fall the most. Okay. So Thomas Bryant fell from 117 all the way to 385 because he's playing 11 fewer minutes a game. Thomas Bryant's not good. Like, he's just not a good defensive player. He is a product of playing on a team that needed cheap production. I think he's better than the 385th fantasy player, because I don't think he's in a position where he's going to play a bunch, but he's not, I don't even think he's a backup big. I think he's a third big, an energy big. I would not be surprised if he didn't average 20 minutes a game for the rest of his career, quote unquote. He's young, sure, but I don't think he's very good, and that's a huge bummer. On the other hand, Jalen McDaniels had a similar drop of 200 to 260 spots from 122 to 329, but he is just playing 11 fewer minutes a game, which means he's scoring 5 less points, 1 less 3, 2 less rebounds, 1.5 less assists, 0.8 fewer steals, 0.4 fewer blocks, and then everything else going down too. So all of that is a product of the playing time, and he's in Philly where they're trying to win. And I don't think Doc Rivers can handle DeAnthony Melton and Jalen McDaniels at the same time. That's just too much chaos on the court. He just can't handle it. So he just hasn't been playing Jalen McDaniels, despite, I think Jalen's pretty good, but Jalen is an unrestricted free agent this summer. This should not deter you at all from considering him a top 200, probably top 170 dynasty asset. You guys know how I feel about Jaden McDaniels. Jalen is just like a slight step below that, because I don't think he has as much offensive juice, but even still, he's a good two-way player. He has some wrinkles in his game that he needs to iron out, but I have no doubt that he is going to end up on a team like the Pacers, who need a wing badly and who are rumored to be pursuing him at the trade deadline before he was moved from Charlotte to Philly. So he's going to pick where he can go, and I guarantee you he is going to go for the place where he can set himself up for the next contract after this one, where he can get 25 minutes a night. And when he does that, he will jump all the way back up into the top 120. Another faller, Victor Oladipo. That's just injury circumstance. He hasn't really been great. That's a huge bummer. Yusuf Nurkic falling 173 spots from 95 to 270 is concerning. I have Nurk in a couple places. He's playing four fewer minutes, but he's just down everywhere, including efficiency, despite fewer shots. He just has not looked good. And the fact that the Blazers signed him for the contract that they did, I thought it was immediately bad, because there were a ton of years on it. 4 years for him. Hasn't proved he can stay healthy. maybe a buy low if you are in a shallower league and you can take his injury risk. But in deep leagues, I like in a 30 team league, it would have to cost me a player that's not super young and doesn't have a ton of upside in like the 150-ish range to want to trade for Nurk. Like I would send Dorian Finney-Smith. Like, I don't know. Would you rather have Bobby Portis or Yusuf Nurkic? That is an actual question, I think. And that's just not where you want to be. Ben Simmons, this is injury and everything. It is awful that he's been so injured and so banged up out the rest of the season with back injury. He's starting rehab. Like it's rough. And I have Simmons stock just about everywhere. So I'm really hoping he gets back. And I'm glad that he is taking the time now to get a head start on that. And hopefully he can come back next year and reestablish himself as at least a good player, probably not an all-star level player again. Anthony Simons, playing time and efficiency issues dropped from 68 to 223. The Blazers have been atrocious. They're now shutting everybody down. I don't understand that team, like I've said before, but I'm not worried about his fantasy stock. If anything, it might be going up because it seems like Dame's getting tired of rebuilding, and that is the only thing that the Blazers end up doing despite trying to be good because they just aren't. Bol Bol talked about him. Huge bummer, but not actually because I didn't invest in him anywhere, and I was trying to tell you guys not to do that either. Alperen Şengün dropping from the 66th ranked player pre-deadline to the 188th best player post-deadline. He is playing more minutes, but he's scoring less, fewer rebounds, fewer blocks, and worse percentages on worse volume, and that is just... I don't know what to make of Şengün, honestly, because it seems like he's very productive and then he doesn't play very much. And then the Rockets don't seem to prioritize him. I don't know. He's playing 29 minutes a game, 13 points, 8 boards, 4 assists, 0.9 steals, 0.6 blocks, 51% from the field, 61% from the line, 2.6 turnovers. I do not think Alperen Şengün is the elite dynasty asset that a lot of other people in the community do. I have him ranked higher than where I would actually take him because I do not trust the Houston Rockets, A, to be a competent organization that functions properly, but B, they have so much going on that I don't know if they will put Şengün in the place to be returning that level of investment. And not just that, I don't think Şengün's like, I don't know if he's going to end up being a good enough defender to do all of the things he needs to do on offense. I'm watching this playoff specifically to see if Jokic and Sabonis can do it, because those are two extremely high-end outcomes for Şengün that, who knows? We will have to see what happens there. Is he outside the top 180 as a fantasy player? No. Is he inside the top 70? I don't know for sure. But either way, he is sliding down, but not in a way that has me like overly concerned with his dynasty value because I wasn't buying too much of him to begin with. Call me crazy. Bobby Portis dropped a bunch, playing time and efficiency. I think Bobby Portis is very good. Brook Lopez had back surgery and has looked incredible, but he's still 36. I just think Bobby Portis is a valuable player who does a little bit of everything and can play the four and the five. That's just extremely valuable in this league. So I wouldn't think a 115 spot drop in the last couple of weeks would be a huge hit to his dynasty value, but it will be interesting to see what the Bucks offseason looks like. They don't have a lot of moves to make and they don't have a lot of salary to move, but Bobby Portis might be one of them. Maybe they try to do something with that. I don't know. I think Bobby Portis is good. Dorian Finney-Smith, he was playing a lot in Dallas. Now he's playing less in Brooklyn because they have a bunch of him. They have a bunch of two-way wings and they just don't need very much from him. I would imagine that going into next year, probably two of Dorian Finney-Smith, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and Royce O'Neal are on different teams. So I would not be worried about this. I would actually try to buy DFS. He's 30 and he doesn't do a lot, but it's probably not going to cost very much. And we know he is a valuable player in this league that can do a little bit of everything and that has a place in deep leagues. Alex Caruso, it just took a hit. He's just doing a little less. Patrick Beverley showed up and took over the point guard duties. Caruso's not a huge, huge deal there. And then three bigger names. All right. So Devin Vassell down 83 spots. I am not worried about Vassell at all. He's playing fewer minutes. He's taking fewer shots. And then his efficiency is down as well from both the field and the line. He's just not a guy I'm worried about. If I'm in your league, come approach me if you want to get rid of Vassell, because I promise you I will pay for him. He's very, very good. He's a very good real-life player. He's a very, very good fantasy player, and I am not worried about what the Spurs do because Vassell can do anything on the floor. He is a J-Dub type fit in that he can play with or without the ball. We've seen it this year. He can create his own shot. He can create some shots for others. He's good on defense, multiple positions, on and off the ball, has good instincts, and is a good defensive playmaker. I am not worried about Vassell. I do think his ceiling will be capped by how much he gets to play with the ball versus playing more of a second or third option on offense, but who knows? We will see what that looks like. I'll still be buying Vassell stock for the foreseeable future. This one hurts. This hurts a lot. DeJounte Murray down from the 26th ranked player pre-deadline, pretty good, to the 104th best player post-deadline. Pretty not good. It's kind of weird, honestly, because he's only down like a minute or so. He's still playing 36 minutes a game. He's still scoring 18 points a game, a little over three, five boards, six assists, 1.2 steals, but he's shooting 44% from the field and 80% from the line with 1.8 turnovers. And so he is really only a positive right now in points, rebounds, and assists, or points, assists, and threes, steals. Sorry, goodness gracious. That's just not going to be good enough. And I'm a little surprised at the dip in volume leading to a dip in efficiency as well, to the point where I'm inclined to, bias aside, because you do know I love DeJounte Murray, I'm inclined to believe that this is not a real dip, but it does show how reliant DeJounte can be on either high volume points, rebounds, assists, and steals, quite frankly, because 1.2 steals is a huge disappointment for him. I bet if he was at 1.7 steals, we would be in a much different conversation with him. I'm actually going to see what that would look like, because I'm interested on seeing what his 9 cap value would be if he was at 1.95 blocks. Let me see 1 second. While I type this up and look at it, he would be more in the, yeah. So if he was up to his normal, like 1.6, 1.7 blocks, he'd be in the top 70. So we do know how fickle steals can be. And so I'm not trying to make excuses, but this does show the flaws in his fantasy game that I admit exist. I just think he's good enough in some cases where he can make his way through it. Cause right now he's such a drag on field goal percentage. And I just don't think that that's real, despite him not ever being like a true positive in that category. And plus it looks like Atlanta's due for some huge shakeups. DeJounte's going to be an unrestricted free agent after next season with no chance of an extension before then. So I imagine wherever DeJounte chooses to go, he is going to be in a similar role where he does have the volume that he needs, quote unquote. And then obviously he's going to continue to develop. So hopefully we can see some efficiency creep back up, and then he's back into the top 50 like he should be. Last and not least, John Collins. I really like John Collins. His shot is starting to come back, but the arrival of Sadiq Bey and the switch from Nate McMillan to Quinn Snyder has led to more wingy units. with more Sadiq Bey at the four, DeAndre Hunter at the four, however you want to look at it. They're playing actual like modern basketball rather than a tweener big at the four like John Collins, despite me thinking he's actually good. He's playing fewer minutes. He's actually almost as efficient from the field and is improved efficient. His efficiency from the line, despite lower volume, he's got to be out of there this summer. And that was my whole basis for targeting him as a buy, is I just think he's good. And I think his finger injury really jacked up his shot. And if his shot isn't falling, it's especially hard for him to be out there in the role that they want him to play with Clint Capella as the primary roller. And I just think some team is going to go out of their way, trade for John Collins, and be happy with him as the starting power forward and the backup center. It could be the Pacers. It could be, I know the Suns were really interested. I think the Spurs were interested as well. I don't know. I think John Collins is good. He's obviously probably overpaid, but his contract is going to become a bargain the further it gets into it, as all of these other players in similar, like the similar tier, start to get free agent contracts as the salary cap goes up. So those were a lot of the biggest fallers from the top 150, the biggest risers from top 150, and then the biggest risers and fallers just overall across the map. If there was somebody that you want to know about, or somebody you want some more detail on that might have risen or fallen, and a bit deeper analysis on why that might be beyond just looking at the, you know, pre minus post, let me know on Twitter at @Rhett_Bauer. And again, let me know if you are interested in writing some dynasty stuff. There is definitely a vacancy for you here at Sports Ethos, and I'll be more than happy to bring you along, work with you, and spend probably way too much time talking about this sort of stuff. So thank you very much for tuning in. We will see you again next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.